Have you ever covered a carpet stain with a rug, ignored a leaky faucet, pretended your half-painted living room is supposed to look like that? Well, you're not alone. We've all got unfinished home projects, but there's an easier way. When you download Thumbtack, it's easier to care for your home from top to bottom. Pull out your phone and in just a few taps, you can search, chat, and book highly rated pros right in your neighborhood. Plus, you'll know what to tackle next, because Thumbtack is the app that shows you what to do, who to hire, and when. So say goodbye to all those unfinished home projects, and say hello to caring for your home the easier way. Download Thumbtack and start a project today.
Welding instructor Alex DeClaire knows VR training platforms like ForgeFX help students master their skills.
There's a big learning curve with welding. Virtual reality simulates that exact muscle memory that they need.
Learn more at meta.com/metaverseimpact.
We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror.
Everybody just do your job! Understand
that? Hey, will you shut up?
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee.
Alex, a couple weeks ago, we had an interesting conversation with friend of the show, Arif Hassan, on our Substack feed. And it was specifically about Brock Purdy of the San Francisco 49ers, formerly of the Iowa State Cyclones. But it got us thinking.
I don't know if they see themselves in quarterbacks or they see
worship
in quarterbacks, but like the quarterback is like the avatar by which they enjoy the team. And so if you say, hey man, this team is like really good, people are like, yeah, I love my team. My team is awesome. They're so good they can support a mid quarterback. Fuck you, I'll kill you. And it's like, no, man, I think your team is like better than almost every team in the NFL.
So, Alex, it got you thinking and it got me thinking a pretty simple question that's really not so simple at all, as the best questions are. What makes a discourse QB?
Indeed, Richard. That's the question that I have been completely hung up on for weeks since the Super Bowl, since we had a national conversation that I was eager to participate in about Brock Purdy. I remember in the weeks leading up to that game, talking with everyone from the trainer at the gym to some random guy at a party about how you feel about Brock Purdy, taking that as a barometer for how you might see the sport or your position in a culture war between, as it happened, like evangelical conservatives and everybody else, because it got a little bit Fox Newsy. I've been like completely hung up for about a month now on the factors that cause us to sort of nationally go nuts about this quarterback or that quarterback. Usually it happens at draft time, which is coming up, but sometimes it happens at the end of the NFL season or the end of the college season. And that's the topic that I want to interrogate today. But I do believe we have a bit of podcast business first, yes?
Of course we do. First and foremost, a shout out to our friends at Homefield Apparel, who made the wonderful sweater of which I am wearing. Sources tell Split Zone Duo that Homefield's rolling out jerseys. This is new information. This just came across my desk.
I haven't even heard that yet. And I'm honestly pretty well sourced at Homefield.
Yeah, apparently Homefield is rolling out some jerseys here as we get ready for March Madness. That's just what the sources tell me. Who knows?
That's exciting news. Anything that Homefield puts out, the one thing that you can absolutely take to the bank is that they're going to have spent months and months obsessing over every last detail of it and how to make it a piece of clothing that you are truly proud to have in your closet and on your person. So I didn't even know that they were doing jerseys. Clearly, I need to do a better job prepping for our ad reads, but I'm extremely excited to hear it. Homefield is obviously in the t-shirt, long sleeve tee, crew neck, hoodie, jogger, hat game. And of course, varsity jackets, bomber jackets that have been just a massive hit off the Homefield shelves. Go to homefieldapparel.com to check out the entire catalog there, including dozens, hundreds now of schools in that catalog at homefieldapparel.com. Use the promo code SCD20 for 20% off your first order. Also, Richard, shout out to our dear friends at Nokian Tires, who are coming off another tremendous winter of making sure that people have the best possible tires on their vehicles to deal with the weather that has been confronting, well, most of the country. I hear it doesn't snow as much in a lot of America as it used to. I'm actually recording from Pittsburgh right now, where there was basically no snow this year. But even though there was no snow, guess what? You were very well served if you had Nokian tires on your car. Thanks very much to our partners there as well at Nokian Tires. Richard, been thinking, been doing some notes about this kind of vexing question that we have been confronted with in the last few weeks of like, what makes a quarterback a guy that causes us to have a national freak out, a national debate, an argument, a heated argument about his abilities. And I think that the immediate thing that put this back on my mind beyond Brock Purdy was JJ McCarthy, who was the discourse quarterback of the NFL Combine that recently happened as we record this, and kind of follows in a lineage of somebody every year, sometimes more, who sort of becomes the most sharply disagreed over quarterback. And this really does happen every year in 2023, I think.
Alex, because you need to put a pin on what separates Brock Purdy from JJ McCarthy and the other guys that we're going to kind of go back on this list. Here's the thing about Brock Purdy. Brock Purdy was certainly not a discourse quarterback when he was drafted because he basically almost didn't get drafted. Remember, Brock Purdy, famously Mr. Irrelevant, and Purdy, as the 49ers were good over the course of the season, then became a discourse quarterback, the discourse quarterback of the 2023 NFL season. So there is a very distinct difference because JJ McCarthy is going to be a first round pick. I actually think both of us are fine with that. And we're going to get to a lot of his Michigan season or whatever in a second, but like both of us are fine with that. I think that what for me immediately makes a discourse quarterback is, and why McCarthy and Brock sort of how they share this are a couple things. One, you're not the lock, stock, barrel number one guy, right? Like Patrick Mahomes was not the discourse quarterback in the Super Bowl, but beyond the, you know, rings, Brady, yada, yada, yada. But like, you know, Trevor Lawrence was not the discourse quarterback in his draft class. Caleb Williams is a discourse quarterback, but not this discourse quarterback, if you catch my drift. So you have to be not the lock, stock, barrel number one pick. In essence, you need to have a significant amount of debate around you, and you need to have a specific amount of debate around your upside. Everybody knows that if Caleb Williams hits, buddy, like we can all agree. But there needs to be kind of also to me, there needs to be a specific game managery element about how you play, because a lot of this, JJ specifically and a couple other of these guys, this is where JJ and Brock are very similar. Specifically, the way in to the debate is about the game manager quarterback, and that ends up being the debate that we have about these guys. And I actually think it's fascinating because with JJ specifically, it sort of flips a lot of the preconceived notions about quarterbacking for a long time on their head, because to me, part of the discourse about JJ is that he doesn't do some of the flashy, highlighty things as a quarterback, kind of like a Caleb Williams, for instance.
No, I agree. There's a play style difference. As I started to interrogate this, I think you're right that the one of the couple of like biggest keys that makes a quarterback the guy that everyone argues about is if his resume in college lent itself in some way to a question of like, all right, well, how much were you doing versus how much was your team doing? Mac Jones in 2021 is a perfect example of this as well. In different respects, I think that the Lincoln Riley quarterbacks have faced this. I think that in the 2018 draft class, there were a lot of quarterbacks who sort of fit into this mold, whether it was Baker Mayfield or even Josh Rosen coming out of UCLA or Sam Darnold coming out of USC. And in a much different way, which is kind of a third bucket, I think you can become a discourse quarterback just, you know, strictly because you're black as well. It's probably the easiest way to do it.
But so
as we kind of go through it, I see those things. I'll pin it. Don't worry. We'll come back to it. I wasn't trying to drive by it.
Well, I'm not saying drive by. I'm saying you got to talk about what you're talking about, in a sense, because when you bring in the black quarterbacks, because Lord knows Lamar, for instance, was a very specific type of discourse quarterback. That's where I talk about, what debate are you really having? What is the discourse, effectively, that you're having about these guys? With J.J. McCarthy and Brock Purdy and Kenny Pickett and a Mac, you're talking about this game manager-y element about a college quarterback. Because in college football, I don't want to say... So in college football, the quarterback can singularly take a game by the scruff of the neck in a slightly different way than an NFL quarterback can, right? We saw this with Bryce Young in the 2021 season, right? Where they beat Georgia in the SEC championship game. We saw it in the, 2022. Where they beat Georgia in the SEC championship game, where they beat Texas.
No, that was 21. You had it right.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Where they beat Texas, right? In that game where I did not think they should have won that game. Where they beat LSU in the game where he's getting the daylights blitzed out of him. He singularly took that game by the scruff of the neck and dragged Alabama to a victory. That's a specific type of thing that I don't want to say is only a thing that you can do in college, because Lord knows, you know, Brady's done it on fourth quarter drives, and, you know, Mahomes has done it on fourth quarter drives, and yada, yada, yada. But it's, I think there's some college unique element to that specific thing. So when you talk about the black quarterbacks, Lamar, you know, a Jalen Hurts or whatever, that's its own sort of different conversation. The specific conversation that we're having right now is about these guys that don't really take a game by the scruff of the neck, whether they can't, whether they haven't been asked to, whether they, you know, whether they don't need to because of the greater strength of the team around them. You know, that's the space you have to play in. But specifically about JJ, that's and the quarterbacks like him, that's the conversation that you're having.
Yeah. And JJ is a good way in to this. I think JJ, to be clear, is like the immediate impetus for us doing this show, because I was watching, participating in the way that people were talking about this guy over the course of his NFL combine in March of 2024. And it gets me thinking about all the different things that play into the way that we perceive our quarterbacks, love our quarterbacks, talk about our quarterbacks. And I think it's fertile ground for split zone duo. I think that the reality about JJ McCarthy in college football is that he was a really good player. Clearly a top 10 or so quarterback in college football last year. Michigan was not that interested in putting games on his shoulders, and they didn't have to, as it turned out. They go 15-0 with Blake Corum and a really good interior offensive line and a mean, mean, mean defense. And by choice, did not have JJ McCarthy do what you said, take the game by the scruff of the neck and go and win it for him. But that's not to say that JJ wasn't pretty good. You know, JJ clearly is an upper tier athlete, a really good athlete. We saw that a bunch of times in the Rose Bowl semifinal against Alabama that you and I were at together. He made one of the most silly athletic plays I've ever seen a quarterback make on the football field, which was different than Cam Newton punching through LSU, to be clear, but where he catches that flea flicker pass back from Donovan Edwards that was behind him, going away from the target where he was going to throw the ball, and he catches it, gets body control, keeps track of where his receiver is going to be, and heaves a perfect pass to the sideline to hit Roman Wilson for a big gain. I think JJ McCarthy, in just one play there, you can sort of see like, oh, okay, like I get it. Like this guy has some obvious skills that Michigan doesn't necessarily need to tap into all the time because of the way that Jim Harbaugh and the way that Sharon Moore like to play football, and the strengths of that roster. Something else that I think about JJ McCarthy is that Michigan had some trust issues with him. I talked about this briefly on Twitter over the last weekend and realized that it was going to put me in for a much longer day of arguing online than I was interested in. So I wanted to kind of delete my tweets and then catch my breath and sort of express this thought a little bit more deeply on our show. But I said that I think Michigan didn't really trust JJ McCarthy. And what I meant by that was specifically in the relatively few game on the line, season in the balance situations that Michigan faced last year. There weren't many of them because they only played a few close games, only played a few games that even looked like they could be close. But when I pointed this out, there were many Michigan fans who came to me and said that this was a lazy take, that yeah, either you didn't watch the games or you were ignoring context, and it's weird to kind of fall into this lazy rhetorical trap of saying that J.J. McCarthy didn't have the trust of Jim Harbaugh or Sherrone Moore. And it made me think, Richard, like, did I really misremember this? Because we watch a lot of football. Like, what I mean by that is, like, we try to track a lot of football simultaneously. We do the hurry up episodes coming out of the weekend. There's so many games at any given time. And sometimes you miss things. Like, you misremember things, or maybe you watch one or two plays and you form an impression and you just say, oh, like, that's what I know about this team. That's what I know about this quarterback. And you kind of take that to be true when people who watch every game would realize it's different. You know what I mean? Like, does that seem like a fair assessment of sort of our workflow covering college football?
Sure. I think the Michigan thing is crazy because you rarely get a season like Michigan had in the rhythms of it specifically, right? Like, you don't often get like, holy hell, they have not played anybody until November. You know what I mean? Like, you don't really get it like that in the way that Michigan delivered it. And then a very clear, hey, here's the three games that you're going to care about, Penn State, Maryland, Ohio State, where they're going to actually get tested, and then the postseason. Like, it was just very regimented in the way that it was. And as somebody who went to three Michigan games, three of those six Michigan games, specifically Penn State, the Rose Bowl, and the National Championship game. So I sort of saw them when they were tested. I have an interesting thought about where you're going with this. By all means, I'll allow you to kind of lay out the case here, but I have a specific thought about where you're going with this. But I'll let you go ahead. Let the counselor lay your case out before the court.
Sure. And I promise that this comes back to sort of the big question that we're asking here. Though I'm not above doing this, I'm not just here to relitigate a Twitter fight. Though I'm not above doing that. That is the kind of thing that I would do and that I would use this podcast for. But I want to tell you out front that we're going somewhere with this. Michigan fans are really persuasive because they come in bunches. Like, there's just so many of them, and they're all lawyers. And while like the Ohio State fan might just be like, "You lib cuck, fuck you," Michigan fans will be like, here's a detailed chart of how we did on 3rd and 7 throughout the season. And here are 40 different scientific reasons why you're being lazy and saying that Michigan didn't trust this quarterback. And Michigan fans kind of put you in the spin zone sometimes, and sometimes do it, you know, honestly and effectively, because I think they're pretty good at arguing. So I thought to myself, like, was I crazy? Like, was I completely misremembering what I thought I saw from J.J. McCarthy in the portion of Michigan season where they actually had some things at risk, you know, in their competitive games, where there were real stakes to any given play? Was I out to lunch on this? Like, did I not have the proper perception? I went back and I charted every 3rd and 4th down opportunity that Michigan had in their 5 games last year that were either close or could have been close. So the big games on the schedule.
Define sharp for the audience. What did we break down here?
I went back and I matched the play-by-play logs to the YouTube footage of the games and thought to myself, all right, well, like, these are the positions on passing downs, conversion downs in Michigan's games against Penn State, Maryland, which wound up being close, even though it probably shouldn't have been, Ohio State, and the 2 playoff games. I skipped Iowa because,
you know,
there was, you know, like, it just wasn't, as we talked about at the time, and we got receipts on this, like, that was not a serious competition, and it was never going to be because of Iowa's offense. Also, Cooper DeJean wasn't playing in that game, but it wasn't serious. I actually didn't even look at it. JJ might have played well in that game, but I consider that a non-grata game, the same as Bowling Green.
I think everybody knows the score about Michigan, yeah. Iowa 2023.
So I go back and I look at every Michigan third and fourth down in these games, and I match the play logs up against the video. And I really don't think that I was misremembering my perception that Michigan was trying pretty hard not to have JJ throw very aggressively in situations where they had a lot to lose in those games. Like I really feel that on a second review. Obviously everyone knows he didn't record an official pass attempt in the second half against Penn State. I think he was banged up in that game. I will fully acknowledge that. In the national championship game against Washington, he threw six passes on third or fourth down. Two of those went beyond the sticks. In the Penn State game, Michigan had a series where they ran on third and goal from the 10, got 6 yards, and then kicked a field goal. In the Maryland game, in a one-score game in the second half, they had JJ hand off on a third and six for 3 yards and then punted in plus territory on fourth and three. These were in close games, in big spots, where I think that, of course, you can point out like, oh, Michigan had this great run game. They had this great offensive line. They didn't need to throw. But like, you never really know in the moment that you don't need to throw, right? Like you, it's easy to say in retrospect when you go 15-0, but like sometimes even the most runny run teams have passing downs and pass because passing is the most efficient way to move a football a great distance down the field. And I mean, I knew as a Maryland fan, I knew that that Maryland was not going to find a way to win that game no matter what, but like I knew that. And I said that at the time, again, got receipts, but like, I think that it was reasonable to say that they were really trying in like some curious situations just not to put the ball in the air, even when that was obviously a more strategic decision than running it. Continued. I looked in the Rose Bowl, Richard. Michigan had, I think, 13 third or fourth down plays. JJ threw one pass, like a yard past the sticks on a rollout in the entire Rose Bowl. Like, despite numerous situations where that would be sort of the most efficient way to get the ball past the line and get a new set of downs. So like I didn't feel like this was a ridiculous view to think that Michigan just didn't really trust this guy with his arm, which isn't the same as they didn't trust him. You know, they trusted him on plenty of third and longs in their, you know, easy part of the schedule where they didn't have as much to lose. They had him run a great quarterback keeper for like 16 yards on the tying drive against Alabama. But it felt to me like this is a great quarterback. He's athletic. He's got a good arm. He did throw an absolute dot of a touchdown to Roman Wilson on a third and 10 in the Ohio State game that was perfectly delivered. One of the throws of the year for a touchdown. It's like no one's saying that this quarterback doesn't have talent and like couldn't be a good NFL player. But it felt to me like Michigan was trying pretty hard not to have him throw in situations where he could hurt them. And I was hung up on this because...
What you're getting at is like, you know, it like to me, it sort of doesn't matter. What, like, because it's not, this is a conversation about Michigan's overall game management strategy, right? And you saw it to the extreme in the Penn State game, which is this overall control the variables, control the controllables, lean on your strength nature of this Michigan team. And obviously, they won the national championship, like, and they didn't fluke their way into it. Like, everybody knows how strong Michigan was. So if you're Sharon Moore, who was the head coach in those three games at the end of the regular season, you have an understanding of your strength. You have an understanding of the fact that you can assert your will over the opponent. And as far as you mentioned, you know, the third and seven where they gain 6 yards and they kick a field goal or whatever it was that you just talked about, to me, to me, that's less about not trusting JJ McCarthy as it is not trusting the opponent. You do not trust, nor do you respect the opponent. In the Penn State game, you run 30 straight times on the road because you don't think Penn State's man enough to beat you. You know what I'm saying? Like that to me is a conversation.
I think at some point,
You are in pitched competition here. Like you are saying something to me about who's on the other side and what you think of them more than you think of your guy.
I agree. And I remember remarking this at the time, like that was a one score game with Penn State, but I think everyone could feel like Penn State was not going to score. Penn State was never going to get back in that game unless they turned the ball over, unless Michigan gave them the ball in their field position, because Penn State's offense had nothing. But I still felt like as I went back through these games, like there was this, even adjusting for how much Jim Harbaugh prefers to run the ball and like the game state and JJ being banged up a few times, injured a few times, I should say, is the technical word for that. It felt to me like they were in a number of pretty obvious situations where throwing the ball would have benefited them, and they didn't do it. And I thought to myself, like, that's a little odd. And then I looked at Derek Klassen, who we've had on the show a bunch of times, who is a kind of an insane person, and B, like an amazing draft analyst and charter of quarterback play, who charted JJ's success rate by every route on the tree and found pretty much that he was really good at screens and short balls over the middle into the sideline, but not very good on intermediate and deep balls, and thought, okay, like that makes sense why Michigan wouldn't want to have JJ do that. Richard, what's the reason that I've been so hung up on it is that, like, I think it blots out positive impressions of that quarterback. Like, you know, you can't, if you say in one breath that this player has tremendous athletic ability and did everything that his school asked of him and was a really good player for the team, I think that like one of the hallmarks of becoming the quarterback that everybody seems to argue about, including me, by the way, in this case, is like, if you say something that gets to that third rail of like, in some way, this quarterback might have been a liability for the team, or like in some way, this team wasn't fully bought in on this quarterback, then it's almost like you're saying A, that the player is bad, and B, that sort of because the quarterback is what Arif said, kind of this avatar for your enjoyment of the team, like you're denigrating an entire team and legacy if you have at least what I think is the reasonable impression that, you know, a quarterback didn't have like the play calling faith of his coordinator and head coach. You know what I mean? Like,
so like, do you think
I understand it's a matter of opinion, and like we could go back and forth, like, all right, like you think that actually they did trust him and they just loved Corum and the running game so much, and there were these other variables that made them not want to have him make NFL throws in tough spots. Or you could say, all right, like, didn't believe in him. Like, they just didn't think he really had that in his bag reliably. But I think when you become the scent, like the main character, as everything around Michigan was kind of the main character in football in this last year, like it becomes something deeper. Like, and when you talk about a quarterback as a potential gasp game manager adjacent player in some respects, that's not exactly what we're saying about JJ, that it just becomes this broadsided attack on like, not just the player, but the team.
So you think, I'm not putting words in your mouth, I'm literally asking you. So do you think that JJ McCarthy is, obviously, game manager, more game manager than he is game playmaker? Sure.
It's funny. I think and this is maybe why he's such an interesting quarterback and we're spending so much time on him before we go to these other guys on this list. I think JJ is really good. Like, I think JJ showed a lot of stuff, even in the soft part of the schedule, where like he did have significant passing down success against teams that weren't in the weight class, but where you still have to make the throws. I think that his legs are an obvious asset. I think that Michigan clearly was cool putting the ball in his hands in crucial spots in the quarterback keeper sense, as Alabama learned at the end of that Rose Bowl. And I think he might be a pretty good NFL player. I believe I've said on our show before that if the Steelers could somehow wind up with him, my NFL team, I think I'd be kind of pleased about that, because I think, well, Kenny Pickett is the quarterback of the Steelers right now, so I think I'd be pretty happy with that.
For now.
What I'm so interested in is that when you become like the quarterback that everyone argues about, like the easiest way to do that, or like the easiest way to really get tempers going about JJ or any number of these other guys, is to somehow suggest that like that the team succeeded in creating a system where they could work around them, which I think a lot of teams are trying to do with their quarterbacks.
Well, so in the NFL, well, let me say this. JJ McCarthy has this thing now that I think, like, it's funny because you have the conversation about JJ McCarthy, game manager. Okay, so you call him a game manager. But then the thing that all the game manager conversations go back towards are QB wins, which Lord knows are my like basically least favorite stat. But QB wins, which if you want to have a rhetorical debate, yada, 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 then proves the fact that you are essentially a game manager because you didn't screw it up, yada, yada, yada. I will say this. I have also seen JJ McCarthy, I mean, yeet some balls. The first play of the Rose Bowl was one of the worst throws I've ever seen. I mean, my goodness, that was a terrible decision. They got bailed out of it via replay. I have, to be honest with you, I have little doubt that JJ McCarthy is going to be a capable to actually pretty decent NFL starter. But here's the thing. There is a significant dearth of capable NFL starters in the NFL. There are not 32 decent to good, or obviously great to elite, NFL quarterbacks. There's around 15 in any given year, probably less. In college, because of sort of the circumstances of the college game, the ability to, you know, game-breaking offense, explosive plays, yada, yada, blah, blah, blah. There are a lot more college quarterbacks, I think, that you can win a national championship with because of relative talent versus in the NFL that you can win a Super Bowl with. Like, sorry, you're not winning a Super Bowl with Baker Mayfield. That's not happening. But could you have won a Super Bowl with, oh goodness, give me like a, could you have won a Super Bowl with Talia on Alabama, if he was still on Alabama, because you won a national championship? Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
And that's about relative talent with the other 21 positions versus the other team. You know what I'm saying?
I think some other JJ specific factors, by the way, that make him special as a QB to argue about, even as people think he's pretty good, is that he just won a national title at Michigan.
QB wins, baby.
In the everybody against us year with the Stallions thing and with Michigan becoming like really the main character of the sport in so many ways for so long. Like everybody watched Michigan for the entire back half of this year so closely. And there was such a microscope and their fans were so on edge because everyone was trying to kill them. In the Big Ten, kind of literally, that it just, I think it was all kerosene on this that just kind of made this inevitable that like we collectively, royal we, would have the fight over JJ around the draft this year because unlike in some of these cases of these other quarterbacks we'll talk about, arguing over JJ is like an avatar to argue over the entire sanctity of Michigan's season and like how perfect this perfect team was. And Jim Harbaugh contributed to this, right? Because he went to pains a lot to talk about how JJ was the greatest quarterback in the history of the program, how he was the special guy that had been like a real legend of Michigan's program. And then you add the stuff that we already talked about, which is the quarterback is just like the front man for how a team is perceived. And also some of the questions that get asked about JJ get into the territory of like, how much did he actually do? So for JJ, he's like the most perfect case study ever in what ingredients make it so that we would inevitably all have a take about this quarterback. He might be the perfect discourse quarterback, at least for a white guy.
Another thing is this. JJ is going to get, has already gotten and is going to get the NFL, anonymous NFL scout and former NFL personnel director who is on ESPN guy bump. That's going to happen. It's probably already started, but it's going to happen. I was recently at the NFL Combine. I have had these conversations. I know what's going to happen over the course of JJ McCarthy's well, of the draft run-up. Couple things on that. First and foremost, NFL draft discourse is just this thing that blots out the first third of the year increasingly to me more than it ever has been. And that is a broader conversation about the relative strength and weakness of college basketball, the relative strength and weakness of NBA, and how people consume it, how sports fans consume it. I think that a lot of what JJ is specifically is absolutely going to get gassed up. And this is where the JJ discourse can get into race and needs to get into race, because JJ sits in the interviews with the NFL teams and gets the, oh, he's really well polished. Oh, he's, and this is not at all a problem with JJ. It's not JJ's fault that he's going to go in there, give a strong handshake as a nice young man, and interview very well with a bunch of old NFL crusty personnel guys. It is the fault of those NFL personnel guys for what they take away from a conversation with JJ versus what they take away from a conversation with Caleb Williams. Because if you have a conversation, you sit down, you have a conversation with Caleb Williams, you're going to get, as someone who has been to both of their press conferences, yada, 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 you're going to hear the confidence. You're going to hear the arrogance. You're going to hear you're going to hear what you want to hear from Caleb Williams. You're going to interpret it the way you want to interpret it from Caleb Williams. Either he's self-assured, has a great team around him, is the avatar to the modern athlete in the post-NFL age, or he's spoiled, entitled, arrogant, dad who is a tiger parent, yada, yada, yada. It's eye of the beholder there. Then you get JJ, who, and I think you're doing this, Jay, I don't want to use the word bland because I don't think he's actually bland. I think he's actually a pretty interesting young man. It comes out on the field in like bare feet and like feels the grass and like meditates and all this kind of stuff. I think JJ's interesting.
Yeah. But I think he put a rose in his mouth. I was a couple feet from him right after they win the Rose Bowl. He said, he goes up to a guy, says, "Give me that rose," puts it in his teeth. JJ's very my shit in a lot of ways. Like Godfrey probably wouldn't like that. But yeah.
I think JJ's game. And I think the perception around him, whether right or wrong, and I think probably a little unfair, allows you to project a lot of stuff onto him. I think that is what makes him in this draft out of these four or five, quarterbacks at the top of the draft, him, Caleb, Drake, Bo Nix, Jaden Daniels. Like, that's why I think he has become that guy in this draft.
Is that our JJ commentary package? I feel like that. I think that JJ, I think you're right. And I think for all of those reasons, JJ is like the perfect guy to encapsulate all of the ways in which quarterbacks, well, most of the ways, there's one that he's not, but most of the ways in which quarterbacks can become the lightning rod. And I'm also interested in it because in his case, he was a national championship winner. And so how you remember JJ isn't just, I need to have a draft take, but it's also kind of part of memorializing what will be one of the most talked about college football teams ever, because they were a national champion. And they were the first national champion in a long time at a legacy brand. So I think that also might be why I'm so hung up on like why I spent my time on a weekend before I even knew we were going to do this segment, like going back and charting the third and fourth downs of their big games, right? Because it's like you want to have a memory of like how did this season of this very special team unfold? So really in every way that you could want to have a take about a quarterback in any way, I feel motivated to have them about JJ McCarthy. So thank you, JJ. Appreciate you. Hope you come to Pittsburgh, but ideally not requiring a trade up. If you could be around kind of in the back half of the first round, that would be nice.
So I also think, so JJ, to kind of take us home here, JJ is a part of a college football machine similarly, honestly, to Stetson Bennett, that won a national championship in a way that hadn't been done before, or at least competed. I should say competed for a national championship in a way that hadn't been done in the last few years, right? You were not gonna confuse Stetson Bennett's college football season with Kyler Murray's. Like you were in, and Kyler Murray made it to the playoff, right? You were not
or gonna, Trevor's
or yeah. Trevor's or Michael Penix's or you know what I mean. And so I think JJ interestingly ends up in this tier that includes Kenny Pickett, that includes Mac Jones, that includes hell Daniel Jones. That what do those guys have in common? And it includes those guys, but it doesn't. JJ is different because JJ can actually hang his hat on the national championship in the way that Matt could too, can actually hang on, hey man, I won a national championship at the end of the day, which is funny because you can then default any argument to that because winners win, he won.
And the flip side of this is that there are quarterbacks who are, you know, who might be controversial in more standard ways. Like, you know, not everyone thinks Drake May, right, is going to be an amazing NFL quarterback, or not everyone thinks Jaden Daniels is going to be an amazing NFL quarterback. But sometimes you can be a kind of polarizing draft prospect in ways that the zeitgeist just doesn't pick up. And it's funny to me what you sometimes lack that might make you not be that guy. Like Drake May played at North Carolina. North Carolina football fans will not get into the muck the same way that Michigan football fans were. Maybe if it was UNC basketball, they would. You know, I'd have to pinpoint what it is with Daniels, but not everyone is going to get this kind of heat or juice or whatever you would call it, depending on your perspective, that JJ has gotten, even as you have this disagreement about what they're going to be at the next level or what they were in college.
I also think it's funny because like Anthony Richardson, what again, and this is why I talked about at the beginning of the episode, like the specific kind of discourse you were having, right? Like Anthony Richardson was obviously a polarizing player last year, all this kind of stuff, but different, right? Anthony Richardson was a conversation about upside. No, and how bad the team around you was, right? And performing in spite of it and how you project that to the next level and all that kind of stuff. It's just funny because where I think JJ ends up is just in this kind of arena of relatively blank canvas guys because of their game. Again, not anything to do with the actual personality and the actual human being. I'm talking about the game here. I think he ends up in that sort of blank canvas family of guys where like an Anthony Richardson, who was weak, that plenty of discourse about last year, it's just a different conversation.
That's our show for this week. Hope you have enjoyed. I appreciate y'all indulging this sort of curiosity that I had, that we had, that wanted to satisfy about what makes a quarterback be the guy that everyone talks about going into the draft, especially when it's not as simple as being the 1-1 guy, like the obvious first overall pick or something to that effect. Richard, the only thing we haven't mentioned before we get out of here is that there is a way to get a lot more Split Zone Duo. And that's to subscribe to our Substack at splitzoneduo.com. We're actually heading off right now to record another episode for our subscribers there. I think one of the great things about our show, which is something that we are completely blessed with by you, the audience, is that we are a subscriber-supported publication through and through. Obviously, we have a couple of dear advertising partners who have been with us for a very long time and are essential to what we do. But you guys are the ones who make this show fundamentally possible, how we make the vast majority of our money, how we decide what to make is based on what you're interested in. So we are honored by the many thousands of you who are already with us at splitzoneduo.com and would love to have you help us make the show, support what we do by subscribing to our Substack and taking an active hand in helping us make this thing. And also you get to ask questions, you get more bonus episodes, you get newsletters, all of the works. Am I missing anything or you want to close us out?
So you would say that despite our individual talents as creators and podcasters, we are the sum of the parts of our support that lead us to success.
Right. But I do think it's telling that this show was kind of about an idea that I had that we recorded today. but you and Goffrey didn't trust me to record it by myself. And I think that's telling that you made me work in a system.